Say it again.
So, besides the fish in the African lakes, our examples are the salamander in Europe, and also some other fish in the Rhine system, which also seems to have two recently upcoming sister species there. And so the main issues which I want to address, so how I want to come to that is, okay, first of all, I more or less take it for granted that symmetry is possible, and I want to find it, I want to construct a simple model where I find it as well. Second, I do allow for spatial structure, for the possibility of patching, of organizing of similar species into patches. This is what these people seem to observe. So question is, if sympatric speciation is possible, what is changed if one allows for this spatial organization? And then, well, one question which arises there, what happens at the points where these touch each other? Is there hybrids going to form or not? And what does that mean? So I'm afraid I've given quite a general introduction, so now you might think that that I can do everything. In fact, it's not so. I will just show very, very modest model approach, and I try to before one constructs models, well, one tries to figure out what one could feed in there, what is essential in there, and so what is the main ingredients, and then let's see what comes out. Does this make any sense? Does this explain anything interesting? So we have these species or these individuals, they interact, so we need some ecological interactions. We have the something which is like a resource distribution which rules their fitness, and we have density frequency dependent change of the fitness due to competition effects. Second, we do want to see how the mating, well, we do want to include mating behavior and to model what comes out of the mating. So we have some sort of genetics in there. And of course, this is what we mainly wanted to do. We want to deal with spatial structure. And so we want to allow for inhomogeneities in the space, and different phases of the population distribution, and in that sense, what we want to do is different from other models. So that's the kind of thing we want to look for. And a physicist would now go on and write down some sort of equation which looks like this, some sort of field theory of population density. Well, I guess most of you will immediately guess what these things mean. So I look at a distribution of individuals. So they have each of them has a certain trait I, and of a given trait I, there's a certain number of individuals. So N of I is something like a profile in the trait space. However, this profile in trait space, this distribution, may be different on each point in the real space. So it's dependent on where we are in space. And so the local change, the local evolution there, how the numbers change, they will have some part which is some kind of spatial coupling, some sort of diffusive motion, migration of them. There should be something, some reproduction rate, so some production of offspring, which I termed capital R here. And the viability of this offspring depends on how it looks like, on its trait, and it depends on where it is. So there is also some inhomogeneity. And then in the model, there should be, well, some kind of, well, it shouldn't be able to grow forever. So if there is too many of them, there is a competition load on them, which pulls them back down. And it depends on, of course, population number J, individuals of type J, have a certain impact on those of type I, and this should be some kind of interaction matrix. And then I could think of some kind of general death rate which inflicts of them. So thinking of what is if there is a if I look at different general conditions. So if there is, you know, if there is, for instance, good weather or bad weather, or say there was ice age and now temperature is raising and living conditions get better. So this would mean that I would have to change this variable here. And then one could think of some noise and so on. As in general, if you write this down there, of course it gets horribly difficult. I mean it's nonlinear, and in particular, I mean this is obvious here, this kind of quadratic nonlinearity. But here really, if you think of how the mating choice goes on in this term, there is the main there is a big difficulty hidden in there, and also I should say that it's a very funny coupling here between the real space, between the R space and the trait space. So it's like, you know, like a maybe random field easing model, so that the spins behave different in every, so the internal space behaves different wherever you think you are located, or you know, like spins in an atom which depending on which orbit they are, they feel different magnetically. So I mean it's really there is a coupling between the external and the internal space, and we just have to, yeah, so what a physicist would think that things should look like, it gets too much in the beginning, so you have to figure out, okay, how do we get this simpler, how do we get started.
This is already in a uniform environment, there's no external
event. Well, this here should be, we can't really see, the resource distribution should depend on where you are located in space. So there are some parts of the landscape which are more favorable to one extreme, some to the others to the intermediate. So there is inhomogeneity in there, spatial inhomogeneity.
The reproduction then shouldn't get be proportional to M.
The what? The reproduction rate?
No, the term.
This here, this R. This is a function of the N, and I'm going to come to this towards the end of the talk. I'm going to present possibilities of how one would model this and how the N goes in there. Of course, depends on how many. Well, a bit like what Alex Kondrashov told this morning about the, you know, the different kinds of parents when they mate, and what is likelihood to get a certain type of offspring. So this goes in there, of course. Yeah.
What's the relation between species and your eye?
The eyes are, in this case, a discretized, this is discrete points in trait space. Okay, I could have written it down even in a continuum. And I would then say, okay, species would be if I get different blocks in this trait space which do not mate anymore with each other. That would be species. Yeah. This one or mean? No.
There are some resources in one place.
Yeah, like what David Nelson did. You mean these kind of things? But, no. Or if it gets blown into some desert or so?
Well, all birds can migrate great distance. So if there is some beneficiary of it.
Yeah, that they could. Well, in some sense, this type of migration or of we have it, but no. Okay, here not. It's true. Yeah. Yeah. Okay. So, but let's really come to the simplest possible model and sketch some cartoons of how a simple-minded person like me would see that. So for today I'm going to restrict myself to this very simple discrete version of it. I could call it a domain approximation or so. And this big equation then is goes down to a rate equation with very few numbers, and this interaction just gets a relatively simple coupling matrix, and one can actually write down solutions to many cases of that. And the trade space I've reduced here to just three values. So I would just think of having individuals and the possible traits of them. We think of, okay, they can either be big, have long beaks, or short beaks, or some intermediate beaks. So this is, and I should point out that this is not really something like when you have a you know, like two alleles and so on a locus, you could have small a, or capital A, and the mixture in between. So, but it's really something like if you have a continuous distribution, just putting it into three boxes, into three bins. So that what you would do if you do just some statistics, or if you collect data and you would put it into some boxes. So to get it as simple as possible, let's put it into three. And the number three means, okay, if there is separation, I'm going to see those and those and none of those. But and if there is not, then they should, well, all of them should coexist, or maybe only the middle one should survive, and so on. So that's simplified, maybe oversimplified.
And you need to order them in that way.
Yeah. So here these are in size. So again, this what was I would then be a label on this trait space, and it would give from small, middle, large. And the space also, instead of having a full field, I now think of, well, okay, my full environment consists of two habitats. And one of them is more favorable to those with large beaks. So here the plants are bigger or have longer flowers, so you need to get in there. Other plants are smaller, so there it's better for those which have short beaks. The ones in the middle, I assume they are equally well off in both cases. And what the spatial organization I want to okay, there's many ways of doing that, and you could imagine many of them. We've chosen the possibility that an individual kind of knows or has a certain tendency to be in its better habitat. So it spends an amount of time rho in the habitat which is more favorable for it. And one minus rho in the other one. And if you look at it, then you would then expect to see in the A habitat a fraction rho of those which are better off there, and one minus rho a smaller fraction in the other one. And this rho could be any number between 0.5 and 1. And I think of it as being some sort of inheritory property of these individuals. So if you know if they teach their children if parents want to be with a certain fraction rho of their time, or with a certain probability rho in the good habitat, then also their children will tend to have the same behavior. And one could think of this rho as being fixed, and then just look at how these distributions, how the numbers of populations will come out. But in fact, we want to see, does localization or does migration evolve on its own? So we do not fix it. So in each generation, for each individual, it's fixed. But there may be some mutants with a different row, and then the question is whether these are more viable, whether these can invade. So this is a bit what Peter Hammerstein told about yesterday, or I guess he's going to talk about such things on Friday in much more knowledge. And the question: what then would be the optimal? What would be the optimal row? And so we then allow this system to attain a final degree of optimal sympatry or allopatry or whatever, spatial organization, the optimal degree of spatial organization. I've been...
So the role means the proportion of time also.
Yes.
In the habitat to which you are adapted.
Yeah, which is more favorable to you. And I should point out that also for okay, no, this is on the next slide. Yeah.
If rho is the fraction of time the big T spends in A, and 1 minus rho fraction for the small, it looks like you're saying 1 minus rho is the fraction of time
okay.
spent in that environment. What happened to 2?
Yeah, 2 I didn't draw in here. Actually, I forgot that. Because there would have been too many birds. So for the 2, both of them are equally good, and they are supposed to be equally distributed.
But they're really independent parameters in general. You happen to have chosen in such a way that the assumed fraction of time is symmetric. It's forced to be symmetric.
Yeah, it's forced to be symmetric. Okay. Of course, one could...
Because rho, it's not like a probability. It's not like a density in with a fixed number.
Yeah.
It doesn't have to be rho in 1 plus 1 minus rho.
So
the two numbers.
Yeah. Okay. These could have a
given for habitat A. Are not coupled necessarily in the way.
Yeah. But right. This one could. This row here could be a different row from that one. In some, for instance, if this was even better for the short ones, then this is for the longer ones. But I assume symmetry to keep it simple. And of course one can check for. And. So I now want to motivate choices of the model parameters, or to give some kind of mathematical model background of how I choose these, what enters the competition, what enters the viability of offspring, and how to put in this feature that that we have two different habitats. So kind of what it would be the best mathematical representation of this situation, which I just sketched on the previous slide. So the resource distribution and the one for the the resource distribution should, I think of that, it should look like that. So it's different for habitat A and for habitat B. Habitat A, and here we have the phenotype space and our three classes, our three beak types, they would lie along here. So these would be the middle ones, the long ones, the short ones. And in habitat A, these ones would have such a type of fitness, whereas in habitat B, they would have in habitat B, they would have this type of fitness. And for the short beak animals, it would be the other way around. Here I will use this term later on. So the difference in trait space between these bins, or the width of these bins, I would call something like the degree of differentiation. And what else? I normalize this this curve to be 1, just for the intermediate ones, just to have a comparison. And the width of this resource curve I call 1 over b. And this width is related to the width of how far they feel their competition. So the competition load I normalize to 1. So if some, those which intermediate beaks, they have a certain, they compete with those with short beaks with this value. And the long beaks one, they are further apart, so they feel them less, and this is a curve which decays, and here I say, okay, this one decays on a typical scale 1. So I have to compare here 3 scales. I have to compare how large is the resource distribution, with respect to the competition, how big is the differentiation? How big are my, how far are they, these different traits apart from each other with respect to that? And yeah, okay, there's another one, the question of how different are these environments. So how far apart from each other are these peaks? And well, this is what is then going to go in. And this model here can show has the possibility to have an exclusion just if these the width of this curve of these curves here of these resource curves is larger than this one, because then it's possible that it splits up into two niches and we see them in there. But you will see this later on a view graph a bit better. In particular, if you think of now of animals which would have no which just don't know about these two different habitats which are there, which just would spend equal time in both of them. So we have this row fixed to 1/2. Then this curve, you would just see the average of these curves as the viability of offspring for them. And even in such a case, so even when, and then this f in particular would be smaller than 1. So the in principle, the outer ones would be less well off than the intermediate ones. And even then, one can see that it's possible that they find two niches in there. And to give a first flavor of what can be going on there. Let's just look at this case when there is when this row is 1/2. So when there is no spatial differentiation, and this is what one would call a mean field model in physics, and this is what is the typical type of model which has been around. So everything is geared up, and here this is in this very very simple. In this very simple setup with these three discrete trait values. And let's look at, so the equations in that case look like this. There's this viability of offspring for the extreme ones, which is a bit smaller. Some f which would be smaller than 1. Here, these would have viability which would be normalized to 1. And then there is this competition load. And also, I should say that this is now an asexual model I'm looking at. You don't see it up there. It's written here. Because it's, again, really the dealing with these mating behavior and this, the terms of how many mate with how many others and how much offspring one gets. I mean, that's the main difficulty, the main nonlinearity that in the problem. So here one can just write down
the asexual model. It seems that as long as f is below 1, then this, as long as f is above 1, then this intermediate should disappear.
No, not necessarily.
Well, unless they're losing competition.
Okay? Yeah. Yeah, well, the outcome is down there. It's very simple. The outcome is down here, and so there is one sees basically three. Okay, I should say that the solutions are symmetric, and one can see that the symmetrical one is actually stable. So 3 is equal to 1. This number of 3 is equal to the number of 1. And there is three main outcomes, and one of them is the interesting one. Interesting one.
This is called the alternative.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. And so for a certain region in this space, only the middle trait is going to survive. And this happens if this competition here is larger than the fitness, the viability of the offspring of the outer ones. So this would mean, if you think back of these curves which I showed before, this would actually correspond to the case that this curve here is narrower than this curve. So there is no way to get two niches into this resource distribution. So in that case, one sees only this middle trait surviving. Then there's a big region where one has coexistence of all of them. And nevertheless, the interesting one is for some of it for some reason there is such that the outer ones are perfectly viable and can survive, and even if, because the competition to the next ones is large enough, can even suppress the middle ones. In this case, I've assumed now a certain connection between this outer competition and the inner one, because you remember I had drawn it as points on one curve, and if you assume this curve to be a Gaussian, then this would just be the fourth power of the other one, and in this case you get this type of shape. If you take other powers, then this orange field can shift a bit to the left or a bit to the right, but in principle it doesn't change much. So there is in this very simple Lotka-Volterra equation, so one sees that even if this the offspring viability of the outer ones is smaller than one, there is even a certain range where due to competition those can survive, and the intermediate ones not. And next let's come to what now changes if one does modeling of the spatial traits in this very, very simplistic approach with our two habitats. So this would be the next step in my program. One then must think of, okay, what is the fitness, and what viability does offspring have, and what happens to the competition between them? Of course, this viability of offspring then would be just a weighted average a weighted mean of the two viabilities in these respective habitats, and the better one would be weighted with this a bit higher factor. The competition depends now. Okay, you think that they try to feed in each of these habitats, and the competition would just be our old betas and beta prime and what we had, but now multiplied with how much they see of each other. So the extreme ones would see of themselves a fraction rho, would see a fraction rho in one habitat, and a fraction 1 minus rho would see a fraction 1 minus rho in the other habitat, so that would be the total overlap. And this would be, the competition would be largest if this rho approaches 1, and it would be lowered if this is distributed by half-half. The second, the twos, they are just equally everywhere, so they see an equal amount, whatever the row is, the twos and the middle ones and the extreme ones, they see an equal amount of the others. So this doesn't change. Competition where the middle ones are involved doesn't change with the localization parameter. The outer ones, they see each other like this, so each fraction row sees a fraction 1 minus row of the others, and so if they're all in one habitat, in the better one, they don't see each other at all. So if rho equals 1, then this goes to 0. And now, before I show the outcome of this, now there's one more parameter. So let's try to reduce it so we can still plot it somewhere. And I'm going to show the outcome of this model when rho has already attained its final stable value. So I then, you think of, you have a population at a given row, you think of, okay, what happens if I put a little bit bigger row in or a little bit smaller row in? Are they going to invade? And then let's approach the stable final value of row and what happens then. So again, increasing row will give you a gain in the fitness of offspring. It will cost you competition. So competition will be harder if you more squeeze into the better one. And so then we will see if it goes towards full or partial localization of the model. And I have a slide which is pretty much like work in progress, which actually it is. And let's see what this all means. So this would now be the evolutionary outcome of this row evolution of the model. And what do we have here on the axis? We have again plotted, this is the viability of the better habitat. Here we have the viability of the worse one with respect to the better one. So this is some number between 0 and 1. And this is the competition parameter. So here at 0, no competition between them at all. And this would be everyone competes with everybody the same way. And now one sees here five, basically, oh my god, five different phases. And so far it's still asexual. And so one can have now either only the intermediates. So this happens in particular if the viability is pretty low. So this would be below this red surface. This is everything here below. One can have only the long ones and only the outer ones, none of the intermediates. This is what would happen above this blue surface. And between the red and the blue surface, one would have coexistence. So there would be long ones, short ones, and middle ones. And now this yellow surface, it separates the region from where rho, the localization parameter, attains the value 1, so where everybody wants to rush into the better habitat, from those where it's just partial localization. And in front of this yellow surface, so in this side here, localization is full, is perfect. Well, this means smaller values of this eta, so the worse habitat is worse with respect to the other one. Whereas if it's a bit better, then we would be behind there. So, and the real, now this interesting region for the speciation or for separation of these populations would of course be anything which is above the blue one, and in particularly interesting is anything which is even then in front of the yellow one, because they are most separated. It's not only that they don't want to, you know, So the intermediates are not only suppressed, but it's also such that they are really driven apart spatially from each other. So that would be the most interesting, this front corner here would be the most interesting for our purposes. And let me just get back, because I should relate these parameters here, these fitness and competition and relative fitness, again to what I had before, when you recall these other curves where I referred it to the degree of differentiation, to this what I called X, you remember this, to these types of curves here. So when I had here this, how far they are apart from each other, because now I'm going to allow also this degree of differentiation to evolve. So I ask the question, okay, what happens if my trait differentiation now is allowed to evolve? This means that this offspring fitness changes. It may increase, or it may then actually decrease after a while when you get beyond this peak of this fitness landscape. And it will ease competition. So things will change. And this means that one, in particular, in this parameter space here, one will find some trajectories, and one will first enter one phase, and then maybe enter to some other phase, and so on. And if you do this, it's maybe better to look at it in a bit different space. So now, it's the same type of phases, but now in a different in these different parameters. And I'm afraid I couldn't really handle the postscript here in this. It's different from our postscript at home, so the colors are different. But it means, okay, here one sees what I called X naught. So this is how far the peaks of these two fitness maxima in these two respective habitats are apart from each other. This is this value B, so meaning if our resource distribution is wide or narrow. And in particular, if this goes then beyond 1, this would mean that they're actually narrower than the competition. And here I allow now the trait differentiation to evolve. So what would be very funny trajectories, evolutionary trajectories or paths on the previous slide, now here it's just something which goes parallel to this axis. So here I plot X. And depending on how the ecological conditions of your landscape are, so depending on this B and X naught, so how far they are apart and how wide they are, you get into different phases. So one, there's two possibilities. One is such that you always, first of it, you always end up in something which is, if the separation is very little, then you always end up in something which is localized and separated in space. So this would be below this lowest of these surfaces, which goes on here a bit, which here it's green and here it falls together with the light blue one. And then after a while, you get through, you poke through this surface and you go on into something where there is still localization but coexistence. On the other hand, if this fitness landscape is wide enough, if this is not too narrow, if it's wide enough, you will keep up, you will be able to suppress the intermediate individuals for a bit longer. So here you will first lose the spatial localization. This is when you get through this little green surface, but you are still able to suppress these intermediate ones. So there is still separation in trait space, but there is mixing in real space. And only after a while you will get into this. Only if this is then going too much apart, then the intermediates will be allowed to get up. And one could think of, what does it mean? Is there some final value? And in principle, one can even calculate these values where things will end up. And depending on the overall quality of the habitat, so if this you can actually this it's possible to shift this boundary. I've just now shown one picture. So if the habitat is better overall, you will keep space. You will keep trait separation for longer. If the habitat is not as good, you will lose trait separation, but rather keep the localization. So the trait separation is something which is more likely to happen if there is an overall good quality, life quality for our system. So, and now finally, I think I will have one more or two more slides about sexual reproduction in this model. And this is still changing rapidly, what we're doing here. Actually, we've been discussing and looking at things even until this noon. Of course we will. And now the question is, okay, what does this reproduction rate have been? So the creation of offspring of type I, what does it look like? And it depends on, this ansatz is pretty much like what we saw this morning, like what Alexei Kondrashov does in the hypergeometric model. However, I should point out that this is actually much, much more simple-minded here. So it's something like a coarse-grained approximation to it. So if you would have many, many, many different points on this trait space and think what his R, K, J, I were, then this C's here, they would just be, I put it into three big bins and then I ask, okay, how is the probability to be shuffled around? So this would be the inheritance matrix. So there, hidden in these very simple numbers, there would be everything which you wouldn't like to know about genetics. And just think of something one can check now for different ways of doing this and see if the main features still persist. Then, of course, it depends on how many females of a certain type there are and on the mating behavior. So K means is the number of females, which would be proportional to the number of the individuals of type K. MJK is the likelihood, the probability that this female does actually mate with a male of type J. And then if you multiply this, you get the probability that there will be an offspring of type I due to this mating. And if you sum over all the possible mating pairs, you get the offspring. And now this mating probability, there's also many ways of doing it, and we've been discussing quite a bit about it. And it seems to us that there is one important feature which one should put in, and that it's a difference, that it makes a difference if there is a large population or a small population. Because if there is a large population, then there is always this enough mating partners, so these females won't have a hard time to find somebody. And if the population gets smaller, then they can maybe not afford to be so very picky. So first of all, the number of matings in a large population should scale like n itself. So it should be, if you increase everything by a factor of 2, the number of matings should increase like 2. But if you in a small populations, it should be proportional to the possible encounters. So it should be then depressed. It should be only like n squared for small populations. And well, there's different ways of putting it in. Roughly speaking, if this is smaller than some certain number, n0, some lower threshold of mating, then this behavior will come up. So up here, mating is saturated, meaning that the sum over all the mating probabilities sums up to 1. And down here, it's not saturated anymore. And here, as I wrote this here, there is also some assertivity in mating. So,
you're assuming it doesn't cost anything, right, to check out all males?
Yeah.
It's kind of like information is free, right? But you can spend a lot of late nights in the bars, you know.
Yeah, it means, no, basically this model actually, no, in some sense I think that this comes out if you say you're willing to spend 10 nights in bars, but not more. And if within these 10 nights you find the first 5 nights you're really choosy, but then you get, yeah. So this is actually what, when you're getting desperate, you are hitting this one. And these parameters here, they describe how much females of type K appreciate males of type J. So these are, if they were all equal, then this would be random mating. They would just take any with probability of the frequency. But if they are different, then there's some choice in mating. And here we took it as something which depends on the distance. They want to mate with something with others which are similar to them. So we don't have this behavior of mating preference and male trait, but we really have just mating with respect to the own trait. And again, just as before for this competition, I assume it to be described by some kind of function, and depending on these distances between neighboring or even next nearest neighboring traits, I get certain values here. And there is a parameter which describes the width of this curve. So if this curve is very wide, then there is hardly any assertivity. Mating is almost random. And if this is very narrow, then mating is such that they only want their own ones. And again, I allow this parameter to change. To change evolutionary. So you ask question. Is a population which has a bit different C, is it viable? Does it get in and drive the others out or not? And depending on that, you will end up at a certain stable value of there, or you might end up at some mixture of different values. And it's actually possible to do some calculation. And if there is no such depletion down here, if everything remains saturated, then it's pretty easy to show that this value C here always tends to zero as long as we are in a situation where there is extreme traits present. So if there's, of course, if there's only the intermediate ones and no outer ones, they don't know about mating behavior. They're just all the same. And in that case, of course, it doesn't make any difference what the sea is. But if there is some outer present, then if the sea is too big, it creates too many mating pairings between the outer ones, which would create offspring in the middle. And then due to this factor, the sea is driven to zero. And now, if this depletion zone here is kind of small, then this behavior is not changed too much. In fact, it's a bit tricky, and I'm still thinking a lot about it. But in some cases it still goes to zero. In other cases it will remain to some very small value, and so that essentially after a while, if you allow this to evolve, the model behavior is very similar to the one which we saw before in this asexual model. So the mating again is almost only k with k and nothing else, not with the others. And now there is some little changes due to the fact that if there is a small population and they only want their mates from their own ones, then they might be unlucky and not find anybody. So these might be suppressed, and this changes now. One can see how this picture here changes, and I've been in particular. I want to show how this, what I call the interesting region, this region which is here in the front, so the one which has trait separation on top of the blue one and localization in front of the white of the yellow one, how much this changes. And it's such that if you come from this phase, actually, well, I don't really want to put too much emphasis on that. This is such that this yellow one is really pushed to the back. It means because these would be lonely ones spending their time in the wrong habitat, so they are very unhappy finding their mate, so it's very hard for them to invade. However, also this blue one is a bit shifted to the bottom, depend by an amount which depends on how big this depletion this zone is, or this small, because below this small blue one, below the blue one, as you go through the blue one down there, this intermediate population is still very small. And if this is still smaller than this N0, this size which would be needed, then they just can't come in. So this blue one is going to be pushed down. And if I should draw, so now I'm showing how this blue one is now being changed by a new one. And again, I was very unlucky with the color coding of the postscript, so I tried to draw it again. So what is here blue is just the old blue one, which we saw there. And there is a new red one, which kind of cuts through. And here, it's below the blue one, and behind there, it's above the blue one. And this intersection line here is roughly the one where you had before the yellow one. So in any case, this now, with this sexual reproduction, the zone where one has both trait separation and localization is bigger. And the interesting part is, in particular, is the one that one can move, push down the case where this intermediate comes up. And so, I mean, that's about so far the main message which I wanted to say about here, this sexual model. I should conclude, or of course I should say that we are still much more working on it and trying to study this shifting in more detail and also to understand better really this evolution of the sexual trade, of if it doesn't go really to zero, but where would it stop?
I still don't understand this. So if your maiden evolves that eventually every time, within itself,
you
say that it becomes similar to the asexual case.
Yes.
But if your intermediate type is heterozygous, then it should be very different.
Yeah, it's
Segregate away the extreme type.
It's not really. So it's not that these three ones are really, determined by one locus with two alleles.
Well, not necessarily. Suppose that you have made a lossary and you make these bins.
Yes.
But still, your average bin, if you have any kind of underlying genetic heterogeneity, your average
might have a little.
It must have a mixture of zeros and ones. It's not going to be a true gradient. So even if they mate only within themselves, unless
a little bit should get out.
Well, not necessarily a little bit. So.
Right. If you are depending on where you are in the bin, when you are closer to the boundary of the bin,
well,
then
suppose that you have 100 loci. Yeah. So if I have between 0 and 30 in your bin 1, between 30 and 72, and between 70 and 103. So then if you mate within your intermediate bin, they will segregate away like crazy. I mean, in
Okay.
It's not going to be an epsilon.
And in this case, okay, so this would be, this would matter for the case when there is these intermediates present, but it would not really matter, so it would suppress the intermediates even more, right?
I think so.
Yeah. So it would help even this case of, if I think of,
if you're not making any bins, if you have honest phenotypes, and you have made them only within the phenotype, then since you already in 1921, it is known that eventually you get only all zeros and all ones.
Yeah, okay. Okay, but here I was looking at, maybe this might even help, because I was looking at the case where these intermediates are not present at all. So I was looking whether the phase where there is only the extreme ones gets more stable, so. Okay, but to sum up what I've been talking about, what we've been doing, I wanted to show that we wanted to imply space into the model, so the possibility for the species not only to evolve differences in trait space but also to get distant from each other. So we want to look at sympatry or sympatric speciation with the possibility of spatial modulation, and it's not like allopatry. So it's really that they choose themselves. It's just they could still go close to each other, but they choose different parts of it. And the question is, what does this change? And well, the hope is that this would actually then create something like a double barrier, because you would have to overcome, you would have to link them over the trait space and also to link them over the real space. And and there is also they because, as I said in the introduction, there is quite a lot of field studies where people do see these patchings. When they looked at the salamandra, which went on and which all came from the same original species, they split and then they went into neighboring valleys. They still could have stayed together, but they preferred to go apart. Or if you look at mouse or vole populations and so on. And or this example of these small fish in the ground of the Rhine, which tend to be separate, which go to something. And then if we try to also implement sexual reproduction, and as far as we found is it's actually such that to a certain degree the sexual reproduction actually helps this type of separation. I've mentioned briefly that there is that this overall habitat quality has some certain influence, and that one may actually trigger the need for speciation, such that if everything is very poor, it's better to stay together in small numbers, but as it gets bigger, then the numbers increase, and then at some point it might become favorable to split apart, and this might something have to do with what happened after the Ice Age to the salamander. And well, still, as I said, there's a lot of things to study, and not only to have these two habitats, but to really study profiles and domains and domain walls and how what happens if there are hybrid zones, how would they look like, and so on. I mean, there's tons of things to do. Thank you.